Hello.
Hi.
Could I please start by asking you to state your full name, the date, the time, and your location?
My full name is Veronica Yvette Pryor Fashon. The date is May 26, 2022, and the time is 1:07 p.m. Central Standard Time.
And where are you located?
In Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
All right. And do you consent to having this interview recorded, digitally uploaded, and publicly released under a Creative Commons license, attribution, non-commercial share alike?
Yes, I do.
Would you please start by just introducing yourself to anyone who might find themselves listening to this? What would you want them to know about you?
Well, my name is Veronica, and I am the mother of four, and I'm married. I went through a lot of trauma growing up, so to be introduced to another traumatic experience shows the resilience that has been cultivated in me over time. I at that time I worked I was working at a school system as an auditor, so I was around a lot of people before we actually found out what was going on during this period. I did get a little sick. I do have some of the high markers for getting sick with COVID. And at first I thought it was just something with my allergies. So I went to go get the allergy shot in January because it started like around this November, December. They had the crud going around in the schools, which is normal in school systems. And so went to go get an allergy shot.
And sorry, you're talking about January 2020, right?
Yes, January 2020, because I started getting sick in 2019. Like I said, with the crud in the school systems, we just thought it was just a regular crud. And so I went to go get an allergy shot in January. But by February, I still wasn't getting better. So went again at the beginning of March and to ask for another shot. And it was like, well, Veronica, I'm like, it's not getting no better. And my allergies, I'm still all heady and everything. And then I'll never forget March 16th, 2020, when we were told that we were going to be sent home and not to come to work because of COVID. I'm like, what's COVID? And that will be a day I never forget, because weeks after that, I started losing my smell and my taste, and I had no desire to eat. And so I told my husband, I said, I'm gonna just stay in the room because I'm just not feeling good. Still never put two and two together. And my children kept saying, well, mama, are you gonna get up? I'm like, nah, I just don't feel like it. Then after a while, my legs just started aching like a horrible toothache, both of them. And I didn't want to move, I didn't want to eat, I didn't want to drink, I didn't want anything. When my fever started spiking, that's when I started getting a little concerned, because I usually have a high tolerance for pain, just like I said, because of the trauma that I went through. And just to give a little backstory to that, at that time, in 2020, I had just made 2020, right now, I had just made, I think, 49. Yeah, about 49, I think it was. And because I'm 51 now. And my birthday is in January. So I had been through incestuous abuse 28 years of my life. So I'm kind of used to keep taking a licking and keeping ticking, because that's just how life was for me. That was my truth. But this kind of put me on my behind. When my fever wouldn't go down, I told my husband, I said, I think I need to go to the hospital because I don't want my children to get sick. And we are blessed that my room has a bathroom in it, so I was able to isolate from them for a period of time. So I went to the hospital, and sure enough, that's what I had, COVID. They put me on a breathing machine because I was unable to, and even now, you will hear me still pulling to take a breath because I still have some of those symptoms, and from the fallout from it. I was hospitalized for a week, it was 7 days. And it was very nerve-wracking. I didn't have enough breath to really talk to my children. I had so many thoughts going through my mind because they had just not too long ago lost my mom because of depression, and she stopped eating because of the abuse that we suffered at the hands of my father. And I'm like, Lord, I don't want them to have to go through this. They're going through grief already. So I just said my prayers, and then I had to shift my mindset to not focus on the TV. I stopped watching the news. I stopped watching the numbers because it was only putting me in a bad state. And so I kind of just focused on me and the things that I can control. And going into the hospital, it was gloomy because I really didn't. Of course, your family can't come in, and you had no one technically, but I will never forget my nurse assistant and my nurse. They became my family. They showed me so much love, and my doctors that was there. I remember one nurse, she had told me that she, I guess, didn't even have an opportunity to let herself finish healing. And she came back as soon as her symptoms subsided. And I was in the critical care unit on oxygen or what have you. But I was grateful. I had to have a pot in my room because I was so weak. I was not able to really get to the restroom on my own without possibly falling because I had lost extreme amount of weight. I had no appetite, and I really didn't want to drink anything. And I'll never forget that I came out. I was released on Easter of that year. So can we talk about a resurrection? I will never forget that resurrection day. And I came home, and of course I had to go back to my room because I still was showing the symptoms, but they had subsided. I was home for several weeks, went to the doctor. I think it was after 6 weeks for another checkup, and my breathing wasn't getting too much better. So a little bit further down the line, because I had developed fluid and stuff around my heart and was really having challenges breathing. And I still tried to find something to be grateful for. And that was the fact that we weren't at work. So I didn't have to worry about not getting paid like some, because my job still paid me. I didn't have to worry about my children not having anything to eat or whatever, because we were able to take care of those things, and I was grateful. Was going through a lot of challenges. My husband was trying to, because he was a truck driver, and trying to get our truck fixed, and he didn't tell me because normally I take care of the business side of different things. And he tried to get his truck fixed when I was in a hospital, and they done something wrong. It didn't last a day, but $5,000 later it was gone. And it's like, okay, we still don't have work, because he was the main source of income along with my check. Had to go back to the hospital. I was hospitalized again another 7 days with them trying to get my breathing together. And I remember going to my primary care once I got out, and it was just so nerve-wracking because you would see all these people and you would hear people talking about losing loved ones. And of course, my family lost loved ones, and we had loved ones that were hospitalized. And in fact, one of my aunts now out of New York, ever since COVID, she's been totally bedridden. And that's been a long time. That just have to be on your back. But she had like a lot of high markers for what caused her problems, just like I did, which was diabetes, blood pressure problems. But that kind of comes along sometimes with the territory, with certain things you're able to go with, and then the stresses of life that I had to go through. My having to have that conversation the second time with my children, because the first time my husband was so nervous, he didn't even tell them where I was. And I didn't find out till later on. They thought I was on one of my trips, because I'd go tell my truth about being a thriver of incestuous abuse and domestic violence. And so they thought I had to left out of town. He never did tell them I was in a hospital, because he was like, Veronica, I was scared my own self. I didn't know what to expect, but I didn't know how to answer this. So I just didn't tell him. But the second time I went, because I had a conversation with him, I was like, I appreciate your point of view and how you felt, but God forbid, what if something would have happened? Then when they would have looked at you like, why we didn't know. And so I text them the second time I went in. I would send text messages because I still didn't have strong breath because of the lack of oxygen. And that's how I kind of kept in contact with my babies and my husband, and trying to keep them kind of calm and just let them know that I'm going to do my best that I can do, and that's all I can do. But just learn to live in the presence and love yourself, and to know that I love them no matter what happens. And just, I was telling them my hopes for them, and it was so nerve-wracking, because even though I kept the faith that everything was going to be fine either way, because even if I transitioned, and that's the word I use for passing, transition, I was at peace, because to me, I knew who my maker was, but I wasn't at peace for my babies, because they still were so young. And I wanted to make sure that they had enough instilled in them. And it's just so many thoughts kept going through my mind. And when I went to the hospital the second time, the doctor happened to be turning when he was making the rounds, and it happened to stop on the news station. And he was like, don't look at that. And I was like, I was just giving you my attention, trying to talk the best that I can. And he was like, I just don't want you focusing so much on that till it hurts your healing. And I appreciated him saying that, because I felt the same way. And it was like, okay, confirmation from somebody that was in the medical profession. And it was just so much, because now I had to go to a cardiologist and a pulmonologist and all these different ologists because of this bug, because of however it started, whether it be in a lab or because of somebody doing whatever. And just thinking about that, it could have been something man-made, just made me so angry. Just thinking about the fact that they may have had clues about this happening and didn't tell us ahead of time, because maybe I would have been a little bit more careful going into, I don't know what I would have done, but you just have so many thoughts going through your mind. And then I had to just calm it down. It's like, you know what? I can't change it. All I can do is deal from where I'm at right now. And it took a toll on my children. It took a toll on my husband. It took a toll on my body. And even now with everything going on, I refuse to live in fear, because I'm still in the school system and I work even more with kids. And I tell my children, I don't want you to live in fear. I don't want you to have to deal with our so-called new normal and not live life in the present because you want to be a recluse because you're scared to be around people or to go anywhere. That's no type of life. And I don't want to live that way. And I don't want them to live that way. So that's my story.
Thank you so much for sharing that.
You're welcome.
I'd love to hear from you how you understand trauma to impact physical health.
The way I understand it, because everything starts with your mind, with your thoughts, how you choose to look at your thoughts, and how you choose to respond and not just react. And I knew that if I just focused on just the negative and I didn't have an ounce of gratitude someplace, because that was my medicine, besides the other medicines that they gave me, I knew that I can have all the medicine in the world from my first trauma and going through the abuse. And yeah, they gave me my antidepressants. They gave me all these things, but I still was depressed. I still wasn't living my truth. And I knew that I had to work on my mindset. It was all about mindset. And so from that experience, I really am grateful, because I think it prepared me for this experience in a weird type of way, because it's like I knew I can only control my thoughts. Even when I couldn't move, I can control what I thought about. I can control my happiness. And even when it's saying, it's like, okay, yes, this is going on, but what do you have to be grateful for? I kept saying, yes, this is going on. I did not acknowledge what was going on, because that was the truth. But I also acknowledged things that I was grateful for. And to me, that was the best medicine ever, was to keep my positivity going, and was to just keep my head up, literally up, even though I was laying flat on my back, was just to keep my positiveness going. And I just knew, like I say, from past experiences on how it helped with my healing journey, because I had a surgery thinking fibromyalgia and all this other stuff was going on with my body, but come to find out it was my mindset staying in the why me, why did this happen to me, what did I do to deserve this abuse that I was experiencing. So when after I came out of surgery from that, and then after healing, and I still had some of the same pains, and that's when I learned from looking at me almost as my own hypothesis to a certain extent, my own scientific experience. I'm like, wait a minute, I had surgery, but nothing's fixed. And then that's when I realized it was my thoughts that needed to be fixed. And so I just hone in on my thoughts a lot. I don't let other people's, now it doesn't mean it doesn't impact me, because I'm human. I have feelings, but I try to be mindful of my circle. I used to have a big circle, but it's not so big because I don't like all that negativity. I try to be mindful of being on social media and watching what other people say, because that takes control of you. I even try to be mindful watching certain movies. If it puts me in a negative state, I don't watch them, because it impacts me physically. So,
why do you call yourself a thriver?
I call myself a thriver because some people, when they go through things, they don't grow through things. And what I mean by that is, say, for instance, like right now, my baby brother made it through COVID, made it through all those things. But he couldn't get out of the thoughts out of his head of the abuse that we experienced. And he was younger. He had an aneurysm at 36, just 5 days after the 7th year anniversary of my mom's transition. And they pronounced him brain dead on the 29th of March. And in spite of life's challenges, I keep thriving. I keep moving. It may not be a fast-paced move, because nobody gets out of or can get around going through the grieving process. Nobody can say, oh, it's going to be this, this, this. It's a process. And we all going to experience it in one form, fashion. And that's just like even with COVID, it's a process. I only thought I would see that when I read about the Black Plague and all those things when I was in school. And I used to wonder how those people made it, looking at all those deaths and mass graves. And to me, the ones that made it were thrivers. They weren't just survivors. They actually thrived. They knew how to pick themselves up by the bootstraps and to keep moving in spite of life's happenstance, because things is going to happen, things that we don't have no control over. We don't have control over what happens. However, I do have control over how I respond to what happens. And that's why I call myself a thriver, because I'm intentional about my responses no matter what happens.
I'd like to go back to some of what you shared about the first hospitalization. And I guess the first question I have is, when did you decide to go to the hospital?
When it was be when old people used to say, "Girl, when you see that yellow phlegm, you got infection in your system." And so, when the phlegm was getting to where it was past yellow and almost like a dark green, I'm like, "This ain't right." And my husband, he's a good nurturer, and he kept wanting to come around me, and I was concerned because, of course, we watching what's on the news. And I'm thinking they gotta have at least one parent. And so I had to remove myself from the situation because I was concerned that by him, even though he would come out if I did get to sleep, sometimes I'll wake up and he'll be right there trying to hug me or put ice top. And I'm thinking, you can get this too. And so when I was having problems breathing, and in the back of my mind, I knew I needed to remove myself from the situation, which was our home. Because I wanted him to be at least there for them, God forbid, if it was my time to go. And so when my chest was it was so hard to pull just a single breath, that's when I made the decision to go because I felt like I was about to literally transition.
What was it like when you showed up at the hospital?
When I showed up, it just felt almost like I was in a dream. I'm like, this is for real happening. This is not a dream. I seen all the people suited up with their protective gear on to have to walk up to a hospital, and then it's like they, I might just say it because I don't know, treating you like you up in a plague, because it was a plague. And it's like, it's not that they're doing it because they wanted to, but they had to protect themselves as well. And to be having to be swabbed, that was so hurtful because it's like I felt like they went to my brain. And I, like I said, I have a high tolerance for pain, but that was ridiculous. And even going up there and just sitting and just not knowing, but yet knowing. If that makes sense, because listening to all the symptoms and stuff, it's like even though I hadn't had a test, I knew that's what it was. And when they came back and told me it was and that they was keeping me in a hospital, I found gratitude because I said, Lord, at least my children and me make it, my husband may make it because I was out that situation. I didn't want to harm them. And it's like I said, it was just nerve-wracking. And then after the second time, once I finally went to the second trip to the hospital, and then I got to the, because I'm a normal nurturer. That's just me. I, after being through so much abuse, I just love helping people. And that's one of the reasons I even in my 50s went back to school to work on my LPC, because it's like I know the power of the mind, I know the power of thoughts. And I just want others that have been through whatever trauma they went through, whether it be COVID, whether it be this new monkey pox thing that's going on, or whatever it may be, abuse, whatever, to let them know that you can find peace in spite of the storm with your thoughts. And I just, my doctor, I when I, as soon as I found out that I could possibly help others with even giving antibodies when they was doing the testing, I volunteered for that because it's like I wouldn't worse wish this feeling on the work, my abuser, the person that hurt me. And because I don't like calling people enemies, but I'm just saying the ones that hurt, I wouldn't wish that on no one. And when I thought I can help, I kept going. I subjected myself because you didn't have to. This was volunteer to get swabbed. And this is before they started just doing the tip of your nose. This was when I did was doing the brain dig. I think it was three or four times I had to wait because you had to wait a period of time before you have the next one. And I showed being positive for almost 6 months before I could actually give antibodies to help somebody else after started my healing process. And that was a long time for it to still show in my system.
Could you describe what giving the antibodies looks like?
Well, when I was given the antibodies, it was almost like they was just taking blood from me, like I'm going to give blood. And I went to the place, and they would stick my arm and do whatever they need to do and just take the platelets and take so many bags. And then I would wait a period of time, and then I would go back again to give platelets again because I was still showing with the antibodies in my system. And I just, it was just like giving blood to me when I would go and give blood. And for me, I didn't give blood often, but after COVID, I started being more of a contributor because it's like if you could just help one person, to me, that's what's important because we have so many things going on in the world with hate and anything. And I was like, if I could just be that one spark of light or hope for somebody, then to me, my life wasn't in vain, no matter how long God gives me on this earth.
You've mentioned the kindness of nurses and nurse assistants. Could you give an example or two of moments where you were receiving that kindness?
I can give with my baby brother. He had his first stroke April 1st of 2021. When we went to bring him to the hospital and they put him on the floor, we still, of course, was in masks. The mask mandates were still on. And when I walked in there and I saw a nursing assistant from a distance, and I looked and I kept looking, and then when he got closer, I just started crying. And I immediately ran to him because he didn't just take care of me the first time. But it was odd he was able to take care of me the second time as well. And when I saw him there, all I could do was just tell him how grateful I was. Because once again, I had to pick what I could be grateful. And in my mind, that was my family. Because they couldn't get to me. But he kept coming in there and kept assuring me and saying, everything's going to be all right. You're going to be all right. No matter what, I'm going to be. He put his life in jeopardy for me. Somebody he didn't even know. And I can't thank them enough for that, because when you hear of people being selfless, it's like if this world had so many more selfless people, I don't think we would be having all the stuff going on in the world. And so to see nurses leaving their families, because I think one of my nurses, her children, she had to send them away with her husband because she couldn't be around them because they were young. And I don't even, I think her babies was young. And to see them being selfless and not selfish, it's like you can't put a dollar amount on how much that was worth to me.
How old are your children?
They're now 17. One will be 16 next month. One's 14. And my baby girl is 10.
What's motherhood been like for you during the pandemic?
During the pandemic, it's been an emotional roller coaster because I didn't want to smother them, but yet I wanted to protect them, if that makes sense. I want them to not live in fear, because then when you live in fear, you're not really living. And them having to go to school, them being sent home because they were close contacts, and then having to stay out for a period of time and praying that they're able to pass these tests, because like the first year they wavered the high stakes testing, but then they didn't this year. And it's like, to just want them to do their best. And then yet not be too strenuous, because as a mother, it's like, I need you to do this, knowing that we're not living in our old normal, we're in our new normal. Because I don't like saying we're not living in normal times, because this is normal times. This just happens to be our new normal. You can't go back to the way we was, because that's not there anymore. It's been changed. Just like every time we wake up, we're just a little bit older. That the last day that's gone, I can't get that anymore. So being a parent, I just try to be more intentional with them, to teach them how to be more in the present and how to just look at things like a breath of fresh air, no matter what it is. And it taught me to even be more patient with them. I look at things that I used to be angry about not the same, because you just never know when your last time is. It brought death closer to the forefront of your mind, I guess, a transition, because you just don't know. And it just made me appreciate, even when they're going through stuff, even if they're not listening, I look at that differently, as more of a teaching experience, because it's like, you know what, at least I have the opportunity to have this experience with them, because I could have been gone, or they could have been gone, or we all could have been gone. So I just, with motherhood now, I have a greater appreciation for it.
What are some of the ways you saw your children adapting?
Oh, well, one of my sons, I saw them learn how to have school on the computers full time at home. One of them didn't adapt too well to that, because even with me, I had to put cameras in the house, because after a certain period of time, we did have to go back to work, because I do work in the school system, and that was just trying to get some type of normalcy. So that means I was one of the, I guess you would call it, like frontline after the nurses going back to get the school systems up and going, to try to give our world some sort of normalcy. And putting cameras in our house to try to watch them, making sure they're doing what they need to do, was different. Trying to see them actually go through their work with learning from teachers in a virtual platform was a little different, but not too different, because they kind of was already transitioning to a lot of things online anyway. It was just them having to get up and actually follow a routine at home, knowing that they can go to the refrigerator anytime, or knowing that they could do this anytime. They had to learn more self-discipline. And that was a challenge for children. Because even when I brought my baby girl with me to work, when they allowed, by me being in school, they did allow me to bring her to watch her, because it wasn't working for her too well. She was in the second, no, she didn't finish the second. When she went into the third grade, I mean, I had her at work with me trying to focus, doing my stuff, and the teacher would text me, "What is she doing?" And I'm looking between my computers, "Kayla, what are you doing?" "Oh, I decided to take a break." So that was just, it was a whole new normal for us, where you would have teachers having to actually text, or parents having to sit behind the screen with a child to make sure that they're doing what they need to do, or try to get, or you see the deficiencies, because she had lost so much in her during that time, because of course I'm just trying to keep my health. So I wasn't able to spend time with her reading, and what child's just going to pick up a book when you're trying to just make sure that your parent is doing fine? Because I mean, the ones that may have not had that experience of a loved one getting sick, they may have could have focused on those things, because of course we do have that virtual platform where you can have ebooks and stuff. But for my children, they just wanted me to keep promising them that I was going to be alive. So, and they really didn't want me to go to work, but I had to. So,
what would you say to them when they asked you to promise to keep living?
I would tell them, I can't do that. I say, Mama, one thing that I would tell you is that I'm going to be here as long as my preordained time is to be here. But I don't want you to focus on that, because when you focus in on the what if, you're not living in the present. And I said, I want y'all to always learn to live in the present. It's not saying that you can't plan for the future, but don't be so engrossed on the future so you can't smell the roses of what you need to smell right now, metaphorically. And I just kept telling them that. And because I refused, I was not going to lie to them, because I think it would have been worse if I said, oh yeah, I'm gonna be here, then something would have happened to me. Because just like I tell them, I say, y'all, I could say I'm gonna be here and it may not be COVID, but what if it's a drunk driver? What if it's this? What if it's that? It could be something. I could have allergic reaction to something. I was like, so never live in fear, because I can't, even if COVID wasn't here, I can't promise you that, because no one knows that. All I can do is promise you that I'm going to be the best mom that I can be with the days that I'm given with you. And that's what I just kept telling her. I just kept loving on them. To have them, to tell them about having good memories. And that's why I told them, I say, y'all, now after COVID, I've been more intentional with doing videos. I've been with videos, not just pictures, because we always take pictures, but with videos, because it's like you can go back and at least hear that person's voice. You can go back and see happy times and all those things. So that with the shift of COVID, it had me being more mindful of doing these types of things so they can have those memories for them.
And you were saying you did your LPC training during the pandemic, is that right?
Well, I started it during the pandemic. Towards the end, I went back to school and to start on my counseling, because I was went to school for my first master's in life coaching with psychology. And so many people kept saying, well, how do you do this? Because even after I would do little mini videos and stuff on Facebook Lives to just encourage people to show resilience and perseverance in spite of life's happenstance. And so when people would have to start going through things, I was like, well, you need a therapist, someone. Well, no, I want to work with you. And so that kind of catapulted me into what I'm doing right now. And I'm grateful I am, because now I get to work with the teachers in the youth in our system. I'm after 21 years, I'm no longer an auditor, but I'm a social-emotional learning specialist, which is getting more into the holistic child with them dealing with their emotions and feelings and all that other good stuff.
Has the training been different because it's been taking place during COVID than it might have been before?
I'm not going to say it's the new normal. So it's like, even with doing with stuff, I don't think about how it used to be. I just kind of focus on what I have right now, because that's all I can control. So like we're doing it, it's like I have to be mindful, especially when I have to get ready, because I'm getting ready to start doing my clinicals and my practicums. But it's no different than me with my job not going into the schools. And so like even going to the schools, I have some of my coworkers that have some of the comorbidity markers just like I do. And they tend to want to stay away, whereas I know that people need that socialization part. Even when I was doing, when my son was playing baseball right after last year and went to go pick up something on the parent side from the jambalaya shop, and the manager that was there, you could see she was having a challenging day. And I told her, I said, it's okay, I got it, just have a seat. And towards the end, she was like, you didn't have to do that. Most people would do this. She was like, I wish I could just get a hug, because so many people are scared to do this. And, you know, when you look at people with COVID, if somebody coughs, they have a certain response, because you're living in fear. And I refuse to do that to people. And I was hospitalized twice, because I know the importance of touch. I know the importance of socialization. I know those important, because it's like medicine. That's, we're social beings. And so to be locked down, that's when the depression and all that stuff was, to me, amplified and projected, and suicide rates was going up, because you were missing out on that socialization piece. And so I gave her a hug. I said, well, here, give me a hug. She was like, you're not scared. I said, scared why? I said, if this can help you, I'm not going to live in fear. And that's how I choose to continue living. I'm not. If I could get through 28 years of that abuse, if I can get through trying to commit suicide, trying to get out of the abuse, and I couldn't even get it right with the medicine, the doctor said, no matter what was in your system, you need to start doing whatever you need to do because you should be dead. I refuse to live in fear, no matter what's going on. And that's just how I choose to live my life. Now, that may not be for everybody, but that's how I choose to live my life.
What does spirituality mean to you?
Spirituality means to me is knowing that, like I say, I don't look at, when I hear the word death, to me that means final. I know that we're spiritual beings. I know that when it's time for me to transition, that just means that this body can no longer take the things of life of whatever's going on. But I know my spirit lives on. So, no, I don't know what to expect. No, I don't know none of those things, but I'm not going to live in fear. Spirituality to me does not mean I'm going to a church building. It doesn't mean that I'm going under a specific religion, because for me, spirituality is personal. It's whatever works for you that gives you your peace. So like for me, I practice meditation. I practice prayer. A lot of times I'll tell people namaste and different things. And I was raised under being a Baptist, but I don't subscribe to that anymore, because spirituality means I'm able to connect to my fellow sisters and brothers, no matter what religion. I shouldn't have a religion divide me. I shouldn't have color divide me. But as long as I know that we're kindred spirits, that's where I find my connection. That's where we find our unity strength. And that's what it means for me.
Would you share about how you moved from being raised as a Baptist into different kinds of spiritual practices, including meditation and prayer?
The way I moved into it, because even with the Bible, it says, study to show thyself approved. And so many people look for other people to give them guidance, and not knowing that everything you need is inside of you. Yes, the preacher can give you tools, just like a doctor can give you tools, just like a therapist can give you tools, but it's up to you to utilize those tools. So I chose to look at all the tools that's been put in this world, no matter who they were. It could be from Buddha, it could be from Sagaru, it could be from different people from different cultures or whatever. But when you look at it, it all comes back to the same place. It's a spiritual journey. It's not a religious journey. Religious journey, if you don't do this way, then you're wrong. That's not true. That's not true at all. Just because I do something a little bit different, it just makes me a little different. It doesn't make me wrong. And so with spirituality, for me, it helped me to grow past the things I've been through, because my abuser was a minister. My father was a minister. And so if I just subscribed to that and I looked at him, then I would say, oh, God hated me, which I did. I was like, if this is what spiritual, if this is what religion is, I don't want it, because you're using the Bible to hurt me. And I've seen that in so many different things. But then when I had my own spiritual walk, that was something personal. And that means for me, if it's me learning how to balance my chakras, if it's me learning how to look at different stones, if it's me learning how to go with the full moon, the new moon, learn about Mercury retrograde, that's nothing wrong with that. That's just learning, because we're mainly water. So when I studied for myself, I'm thinking, well, this makes sense. And it lines up with the Bible. It lines up with other people from other religions say. They just do it a little differently. But that doesn't make them wrong. And so when I started learning what works for me, it just gives me so much peace. And that's how I started my spiritual journey, because it was a part of my healing journey. Because when I looked at religion, religion had me wanting to kill myself because I'm like, what kind of God would have me hurt by somebody that's supposed to protect me? And then when I started learning that he's a giving God or she's a giving God or whatever you choose to subscribe to, because I don't know if it's a he, I don't know if it's a she, and it really doesn't matter. All I know is that's how I find my peace.
What brought you to start speaking publicly about your experiences thriving after incest?
That breath of fresh air, because when therapists would say that you're not a normal person, and that might not be the terms, but I know what they meant. It's like when you see people that have been through things, and I don't like to put markers on somebody's trauma, but when you look at going through 28 years, in the last night that I was and hopefully this is not triggering, sexually abused by my birth father, because it wasn't just sexual abuse. It was mental abuse, spiritual abuse, physical abuse. It was financial abuse. He used to steal my money, all kinds of stuff. And I know I see the world and I see so many hurt people. And to me, I know I was not allowed to grow through this, to be selfish and keep it to myself. Because so many people are looking for answers. So many people, and if they could just know that the answers is within them, and to not pull on the clouds that are not serving them. And what I mean by that is, to me, thoughts are like clouds. You choose which thoughts you hang on to. And that's based on how you were, your socialization and how you were brought up and everything that goes on in society. That's why I don't watch TV as much. That's why I be mindful of social media, because all that impacts who I am. And I want to be the purest person that I can be without those things impacting me in a negative stance. So that's what brought me to wanting to help others, because people would ask, well, how did you do that? And so it's like, okay, I can be your example. What you have to do is, it's like I tell people, so I want to be slim, I call it slim fine, or at least healthier. But can't nobody go to the gym but me. If you want to do it, you have to do your own setups. And I always be honest, I tell people it's not an easy journey, but it's a doable journey if you choose to take that first step.
Would you share a bit? You had mentioned having markers that indicate likely worse experience of COVID when one catches it. Would you share a bit about your health journey prior to the pandemic?
Prior to the pandemic, my health journey was thorough, because let me go way back. When I was like in middle school and elementary, it wasn't as bad. But when my abuse started getting worse, my health started getting worse, because I was hurting. I just wanted peace, and I wasn't at peace mentally, physically, none of those things. And so that manifested in health problems. And one thing that I did notice is, like, when I did, before COVID, when I started working on my mindset and working on my eating habits, because it's like I started noticing that I ate not because I needed to live. I ate because that was my out. Some people choose drugs. Some people choose alcohol. What eating was mine. And it's not that I was hungry. It just was my out. And I didn't choose the best foods. And so part of that was because I thought that if I would get overweight, then my abuser would stop touching me. Well, that didn't work. And so it was like part of my out. But then when I finally did start to come to myself, because my children was my why. I still didn't quite love myself when I had them. Even though I got married, I loved my husband, but I still was loving other people because I was groomed into taking care of others more than myself. So I had to learn that. And I had to unlearn a lot of the other stuff and reparent myself for the things that I needed for Veronica. And so with that health journey was my eating habits, not eating everything on the plate if I wasn't hungry. Letting myself know it's okay that if I only want to have, it's okay. You're not going to get punished. You're not going to get beat for not eating everything. No, it's not saying that you're not grateful. And no, you don't have to think about other children on the other side of the world wishing they had that. It's enough. So it's enough. And so with doing that, I was able to get off a lot of my medication. With my mindset, I didn't have to take my antidepressants no more because I started grounding myself with my spiritual practices, and I was able to release the utilization of a lot of medications. But at the same instance, I was also more aware of my body. So like when my son started going through his challenges with COVID and needed to be hospitalized, not COVID itself because he didn't get COVID, but him be going into depression because of stuff seeing with George Floyd and then stuff with COVID because he takes on everybody's energy as well. And he didn't know how to control that. So he went into a serious depression, which means as a mom, I'm concerned. So no matter how much I know, I was like, oh, Jesus, I know I'm going to get a little thrown off. And outwardly, I was looking good, but I know you still can't control everything. Even with your grounding, it's a process because you're still human. And so I went to my doctor. I said, I'm coming to check on you, coming to check with you. I need my sheet so I can start monitoring my blood pressure because I know even though I'm doing all my grounding practices, I have my intentional rituals in the morning and the evening time to keep my grounding going. I said, I know this is bothering me because this is my child. And so I just monitored and sure enough, after a while, I did have to start taking my blood pressure medicine because it was elevating too high. And then once it got back down, then I was able to wean myself back off again. But you have to be honest with yourself and know what you can and cannot do. And to me, that's a part of me being aware and knowing that self-awareness about myself. So.
Is there anything else you'd be willing to share about your son's depression?
Well, yeah, it stems from generational trauma because even after I was married and came out of it and they told me I couldn't have children. And when I found out I was pregnant with him, I was almost 5 months because this is a little personal, cycle was still going, but my insides were so messed up. And I had adenomyosis too. They were saying that I would never, ever have children. And that bothered me. And because I just felt kind of empty. Like something was wrong with me, even though I had no control of what had happened. That's just my feelings. And well, now he had two stays. The first one because he came home, and that's why I say the importance of teaching, because he came home one day and he hugged me, but it wasn't the normal hug. As soon as he got off the bus, I said, David, are you okay? And he said, Mom, I need to go to the hospital. And I thought earlier that day, because he texted me, and he said, Mom, it's not working. I said, what's not working? He said, Mom, I done tried all the breathing. I done tried all of this. I done tried everything you taught me. It's not working. I said, well, David, do you need me to come get you? And he was like, oh, no, Mom, I'm fine. So because he knows the way I work, it's kind of hard to take off at times. And I was like, I said, but okay, so I just kind of left it because I knew he would tell me if something was really bad. So I thought, but he had called, well, not called, he texted because he was at school. He texted a suicide hotline because of the suicide ideations he was having. And when he came home, he said, Mom, I can't do it no more. I need some help. So we brought him to the hospital and they admitted him because of the suicide ideations that he was having or what have you. And I'm just so grateful that I was able to teach him different tools for him to be aware of the thoughts, to be aware that the thoughts he was having was not serving him and those weren't the best thoughts. And even once he came out the first hospital, he was like, Mama, it felt like a cow herd. And I was like, what does that mean? He said, Mom, I felt like all they wanted was a check. They didn't do nothing to really help me. And he was like, and I'm still in the same place. So after a couple of days, he went back to the hospital. And in fact, he was in a hospital for his birthday. And when he came out, and it was a process because he had to go back because he became a cutter. Because he was like, Mom, I'm feeling numb. And he would come back. He was like, Mom, I don't want you to just say, baby, I would never judge you. And so having that open conversation, he felt comfortable telling me the thoughts he was having and everything, because all of my children have their own therapist. Because I tell them, if your mind is not right, you can go to all the primary care doctors you want. It's not going to help you, because everything starts in with your mindset. And so now I'm watching him grow, even with his uncle's transition, because he's been in grief therapy. He say, Mama, I'm just not ready to accept that yet. And to me, that's huge, because he's self-aware of what he's willing to accept. He say, I know he's not here, but I'm just not willing to accept it. And that's okay. So that's part of my why, is when I see things like that, and to be able to grow through that process with him. Because like now he's like, Mom, yesterday he's like, I had my first job, but I'm not as happy as I should be. And I was like, why? And I knew what it was, but I just try to let him talk. He said, because my uncle's not here. I shared everything with him. He understood me. I said, well, remember, he said, Mama, don't you go there. He said, yes, I know I can talk because we're spiritual beings. He said, however, I want to touch him. And I was like, I said, I know exactly what you're saying. But it's just to get people to talk and not hold those things in, to me, is what's most important. And so I see so much growth in him, and that gives me gratitude. Because it stems from me going through my depression, and then it carry on to him, generational, and my other children too. But I see growth in them. So it's a process with our new normal.
You'd mentioned the murder of George Floyd as a part of
His
precipitating.
trigger.
Yeah. Would you share something about how COVID was not the only thing we were dealing with in the last 2 years and sort of the weight of that?
Well, for him, because we have African American descent, and for him, as a male at that time, I think he was 15, 14, going on 15. And he's a helper like I am. And he knows, because I teach people, we don't look at skin, we look at heart. And teaching them that, it hurts when everybody doesn't subscribe to that. When you have others that judge you because of things they were taught, and they don't even know you. And it made him nervous. And he shut down. He slept for 4 days straight. I couldn't get him up at all. And that was with him being on antidepressants or what have you. And he wound up hospitalizing him again to try to get his medicine regulated, because being the mother of three brown boys, it's challenging. I'm not as nervous about my daughter, even though I have concerns for her, as I am for them, because some people prejudge you. They prejudge me. And I can only imagine how it is for them as males, and then watching things that go on in the world. And that's what I kept trying to tell him, because they're children, and social media was their thing. And I'm saying was, because he sees now the importance of not following all that stuff. Because to me, with whatever you think about, you look about, that's what you bring about. It does not mean you don't be aware. It does not mean don't educate yourself what's going on. It just means don't eat, sleep, drink it all day. And that's what he was doing. And so when he did those things, that really took a toll on him. And so I was like, David, I need you to stop overthinking it. And so dealing with racism, dealing with looking at things, even at the time when our president was in, because I always teach them, I don't care who it is, you still respect the person. But then when you see certain people start responding a certain way that some that you thought were your friends are not your friends, because I went to a school that was mixed. And then when you start seeing certain traits come up, it just, it takes a toll on you. It took a toll on me. But, and I had to bag away, because I'm like, you know what? I'm dwelling on this too much. I'm not going to live in fear. I'm not going to do these things. If they choose to let that eat them up because of not liking me because of the color of my skin and they don't know me, that's their choice. But I'm not going to subscribe to that.
What are some of the other issues of the last 2 years that have been taking up space in your mind and heart?
We've been having a lot of people transition, so dealing with a lot of grief, and it's not just from COVID, it's with cancer, because we stay in a state with a lot of plants in it. And so it seems like a lot of people have cancer and stuff like that, so dealing with that, dealing with jobs slowing down, dealing with wearing masks, dealing with people looking at you different if you just sneeze. It's a whole bunch of stuff. Just life in general, and it seemed to be amplified because we had more time to ourselves. Because to me, like when you kind of stay busy, your mind is kind of preoccupied. But when you sit into yourself, because you had to quarantine or you have to do this, it shifts your mindset, and it can shift it in a negative direction if you don't control it.
When you got back from the hospital the first time, what are some of the things that changed in your household around safety precautions?
Some of the things is we would eat off paper, use paper, plastic, and everything would be thrown away. We kind of stayed in our rooms. We didn't eat together for a period of time. I kept my mask on even after I swabbed and said that I was fine. I'll be mindful of touching my kids. I did extra cleaning. Just touching a knob, as soon as you would touch something, I'm sanitizing. So I started breaking out real bad because I started, I think, over cleaning myself, if there's such a thing. We didn't go out as much because we used to love going out and going places. That kind of changed. It was a whole lot that just, it shift, like I say, our new normal shifted tremendously. It shifted tremendously. And even now, it's like you want to go on vacations and you're concerned, especially like with the new thing coming out with the monkeypox. It's like, okay, should we go? Should we not go? Should we just do something at home? And we still do things, but you're just extra precautious.
Are you still doing that level of cleaning and precaution?
Yeah, we still clean. We still do this. I don't sanitize as much, but I am more mindful of what I'm touching. So like before, when I used to touch a lot of things, I touch less, if that makes sense. And then like if I'm having, I'm going to just use an example, my pen. I don't share certain things. I have certain things that I do share with others. Like they said, do you have a pen I can borrow? I have a specific pen for others. I'm just in this one specific one that I just use for myself. So it's just different things like that, because I have a habit of putting my pens in my mouth. So I know if I'm using that pen, I don't have to be concerned about. And that's another thing. It's like even touching my mouth, my ears, my eyes. I don't do that as much. That used to be a habit that I have when I'm thinking. I would be rubbing. I don't do that as much because it's like, okay, did I sanitize my hands before I did this? Because I don't want germs to get in. It's all those wonderful things that have changed.
I'm curious, what does the word health mean to you?
Health to me means doing the best that I can do and living what's best for me so I can be present, so I can enjoy life to the best of my ability, within whatever ramifications or stipulations I can. Because, like, for some people, health would look like, okay, being perfectly fit or being skinny. That's not health for me. Health for me means being at my best, physically, and it may not be the thinnest, but it's healthy for me, to where if I'm walking up the stairs, I'm not out of breath. If I'm doing certain things I want to do with my kids, I can do it without certain stipulations. That's what health looks like to me. And it's not saying that I may not have cycles of challenges with high blood pressure or having challenges with even with my sugar levels raising up. It just means that being mindful of these things and doing everything with intentionality so I can enjoy life for as long as I have on this earth.
You've mentioned having a grounding ritual in the morning. Would you share mm-hmm. more about that?
Oh, yes. Well, before my feet hit the floor, when I open my mind, my eyes, I always say at least two or three things that I'm grateful for. I always wake up with gratitude. Then I do my meditation. Then I'll do my prayers. And to me, meditation is just, some people look at meditation as praying. I do it a little different. Because like with my meditation, I may play like sound bells just to do my breathing, to kind of set my intentions for the day. Then after I've done that, then I may listen to different songs that's going to bring up my mood. I say my affirmations, and I do that faithfully every day. If I happen to be running late, even when I'm running late, I'm going to get in the car and I'm going to do an abbreviated version of it, but I'm going to always do it. My other grounding ritual is throughout the day. If something happens to happen and it kind of off-centers me, I go sit to myself till I reground. I have a worry stone, and it's a stone that some people may have beads or whatever, but it's something that I can focus on with my breath. Because if you're focusing on your breathing, it stops those negative thoughts because you actually being intentional with your breath. So I do that. And at nighttime, I do something similar. I don't do my affirmations, but I still do something that I was grateful for throughout the day. And I say my prayers, but then I also watch animal videos or things to make me laugh, because laughter helps to elevate your mood. And it also, if I didn't had a rough day, I'm going to end with laughter. I always end with laughter. No matter what it is, I'm going to laugh. And I'm going to find something to be intentional with laughter. And then when I do that, it helps me sleep because my mind is not constantly going. And if it does happen to where I have something on my mind, I have my junk journal. And what it is, it's a journal that I keep next to my bed. If I get up, I write whatever's on my mind. Then 9 times out of 10, once I get it off my brain, I can go back to sleep. And that's what I do.
What does safety mean to you?
Safety means to me being aware of my surroundings. Safety means having my needs met, because that helps me feel safe. Safety also means not living in fear, because in spite of what's going on in the world, I'm going to be intentional with being careful, but I'm not going to live in fear.
How are you feeling about the immediate future?
I'm feeling positive. I have so much joy. I don't go so far in advance, because that's when you start living in the what ifs and you're not living in the present. So I feel grateful because where I am right now and the things that I'm doing, I know that it will make an impact on the world. And that's just the way that's the way I look at life. I was like, I know I'm going to be impactful. And so that's how I look at things.
How do you talk to your children about staying in the present?
The way that I talk to them about that is I let them lead by example. We kind of just have things going on. I say, okay, if I'm always thinking about, I got this test going on, I got this test going on, I say, are you really present? It was like, no, because I'm thinking about stuff that I have to do. I say, so what is one way that you can alleviate that? What is one way you could be intentional? And so one would say, well, okay, well, mom, I can write it down because, like you tell us, if we get it out of our head, if it's something that's bothering us, I say, and that's true. And so I teach them about journaling. That's why I teach them about going to therapy, because you can't be present if you're in your head with all those thoughts, because you're gonna hear those thoughts will be so loud so you can't hear yourself breathe. And so it's controlling the negative thoughts and not subscribing to those things. Yes, you'll be aware. Yes, you know you need to be mindful, but that shouldn't be your driving force every day in anything that you're doing. And that's how you, to me, learn how to be present, because it's turning down those negative thoughts, those things that's screaming at you and saying, you know what? No, thank you. I know that this is a part of my fight or flight, but I'm pretty good. And it's just being self-aware. And that's how I teach them.
Oh, please go on.
I say that's how I teach them. And it's an ongoing process, because they have to learn how to keep self-directing themselves. But I also have to learn how to step back and basically teach them how to fish and not keep fishing for them.
How did you talk to them about COVID and how things were changing over time?
I listen. I listen to their feelings, and I validated whatever their feelings were, because whatever feeling it was true to them, so it's valid. And then I also tell them, I say, I want you to always to do your own research to the best of your ability. If they say that this is because of this, well, is it true? Or is it just something that they're trying to tell you to plant fear in your heart? And so that's how I talked to them about it. I was like, y'all, I don't want y'all to live in fear. I want you to be mindful. I want you to be intentional. And I just want you to be careful, but not to where you live in with anxiousness. If you start feeling anxiety, then you're not being careful. You're living in fear. You're living in stress, and you don't want to do that, because that's when you're going to set off your fight or flight. And that's a practice that they learn over time. And they're still working toward it, but it's getting better.
What's marriage been like for you during the pandemic?
It's been wonderful. And what I mean by that is you really see what your spouse is made of, and you really see how much, with the things that I've been through, how much he truly loves me, which I knew he did, to stay through the stuff that I've been through and that he had to deal with when I was going through my depression. But it has made our communication stronger, because we couldn't be close for a long period of time, 6 months. So we had to be creative with the way that we dated, whether he was outside the room or whatever, or texting. We did this journal where we had this marble notebook, and we would write notes to each other. And so I would pass it to him and he would write it. So it made my marriage stronger, believe it or not.
I know you've talked a lot about the presence, so if this question doesn't make sense, then just pass. But I'm wondering, what are some of your hopes for a longer-term future?
Some of my hopes for a longer-term future would be that it's more globally. It's that people would learn to accept people and all their exceptionalities for this, that person. Because you don't know what a person's truth is. It's just like even now, I don't look at comedy the same. And what I mean by that is, if you have to laugh at someone something that may be hurtful to someone else, is that really funny? And so my thought process about things has truly changed. Also, my hope is that people will start seeing people as people and not as a color, and start relearning things that were not positive growing up, and to start shifting from looking at individuals, whatever their differences is, but loving that person as a person. Because to me, when you start loving that person as a person, then you won't be having people, like they say, hurt people hurt people. When people start to do that, then you start the healing process, in my opinion, of the world. And over time, if that starts to happen, then the world will start to shift. We will be more mindful of putting things in the air that's going to hurt our world. We'll be more mindful of what we're doing, animals, because they have feelings too. We will be more mindful of how we treat someone or our expectations of our loved one, because they don't meet what I'm looking at, to learn that, you know what, it's okay, because they have their own mind. And that would be my hope.
What are some of the ways that you've been taking care of yourself?
I've been extra intentional with my self-care. Like when my brothers transitioned, the day that they were having a viewing, I scheduled me a massage. I also set aside time on Wednesdays. I normally do my showers, but on Wednesday is my spa day. And it doesn't mean not money. It means me getting out my candles, fixing up my bathroom, and my children know I don't want to see no fingers, nobody knocks on that door. I taught them how I want to be loved, because so many people, they look for someone to fix them, or they look for their spouse or their person to be the person that's going to complete, but they don't know what you want. You have to tell them what you want, and then you lead by example. And so that's what I do with my self-care. It's like I teach my children, if I'm getting out the car from work, they don't know what kind of day I've had, and I don't know what kind of day they have. However, I do know that I can be mean if I want to, so I'm intentional with not doing that when I done had a rough day. So I taught them, give me some time to have a mommy time for me to wind down. So they know, even if it's something, I tell them, if it's something important, don't give me mommy time, let me know. But like when I'm getting out the car, they'll come and help or do different things. And they say, how was your day? Okay, we're going to give you some time. Then we'll get like reconvene. And I do the same thing with them. I don't just come straight out saying, oh, I need you to clean this, do this, that. No, they didn't had a long day at school. I don't know what they didn't experience. So I give them that same grounding time for them themselves as well. And so that's some of the things that I do for my self-care, is that I'm just intentional with my meditations. I'm intentional with my massages. I'm intentional with sometimes going and have my pedicure, manicure. I'm intentional with my health. I love going to Main Squeeze, getting my juices and doing my detox or my colonics every now and then. I'm very intentional with that. And that's what I do for me.
How do you think historians of the future might remember this moment?
I think because history often repeats itself, and my hope is that historians will say, you know what, we're going to learn from these testimonies so the negative aspects don't have to repeat themselves. And so we can evolve into not just being advanced in technology, but being advanced mentally and evolve like that. And that's what I think they're going to do.
What are some of the things in history you wish you learned more about?
I wish I'd learned more about not putting so much emphasis in adults and others thinking that they can give me what I need to make me who I am. I wish I'd have known to, you know what, glean what's positive and release what's not serving me. Because a lot of times, like I tell my children, I say, I'm not perfect and you don't come with a manual. So if I happen to do something that offend you or hurt you, I'm sorry. That's not my intent because I'm not perfect. And to me, that's what I wish I would have known, to know that people are not perfect and to not put so much stake in it. And if a person lets me down, like it's the end of the world.
What do you think academics in the humanities, so departments like literature and sociology and political science, what should we be doing right now to help us understand the sort of human social side of COVID-19?
To me, I think they're doing it. They're talking about it. They're doing better with the mental wealth side. And I don't say mental health, I say mental wealth side, is that they're bringing these issues to the forefront. Now, one thing that I wish they would do is learn to respect people like politicians, respect people's bodies for themselves, and not try to regulate that because of different agendas you may have. Because to me, when you stop having agendas and just appreciate people for people, the world to me is so much better. And it can be so much better. And I would just hope that they would just keep building and keep documenting the power of the mind and keep teaching people the power of needing to be able to be mindful and knew about self-regulation, be self-awareness, to learn how to build those relationship skills, not at your disadvantage, at the expense of you not loving yourself. So that's what my hope would be.
I'd like you to imagine speaking to a historian watching this in the future, far enough away that they have no lived experience of this moment. What would you tell them is really, really important to remember about right now? If they went to write a history of COVID, what would you say can't be forgotten?
I would say, don't go into the labs playing with things to try to control people. Just let life be. Don't think that you feel because you've reached a certain point that you have, instead of just letting life be, that you feel that you have to control or orchestrate things that you think need to transpire. Just learn to live and not be so controlling. And to me, with that, I think life and civilization will continue beautifully.
I want to thank you so much for the generosity of your time and the wisdom of your answers. Those are all
Thank
of the
you.
Questions I know how to ask right now. But if there's anything you'd like to share that my questions haven't made room for, please take some space and do that.
I can't think of anything else. It's just how you say over time, I would just want people to know to trust themselves. Know that everything that you need is within you. And whatever you don't need, you know how to go find it. You know, learn how to self-parent yourself. Don't put so much stake in your parents because they can only give you what they were given. And so it's up to us, each generation, to evolve better, not bitter. And so many people stay in the bitter because they did this to me. That's true. They did do it. But what can you do to change it for the next person? And that's what my hope is. It's like, okay, yes, we did these things during these years. Yes, we wanted to find that out. Yes, we had these hypotheses and our minds was curious. But when is enough enough? Learn to find that boundary. When is enough for saying, you know what, of living in on what they did, on what can you do to change it? And that's what I would say.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.